Hello, and welcome to Science World. A team of scientists announced this past week that they discovered two new planets orbiting a star that is nearly as old as the universe. The ancient Roman city of Pompeii was totally destroyed when the volcano Mount Vesuvius erupted in 79 AD. Now, those visiting the California Science Center in Los Angeles can watch a new computer-generated film that reconstructs the tragedy. And we'll learn more about how important getting a good night's sleep is to our health and well-being from a neuroscience researcher. He'll also share some tips on ways we can improve our own sleep quality. These stories and more are coming up for you on VOA's Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. Scientists are finding more and more planets outside our solar system. This week they found two new planets orbiting a star that is nearly as old as the universe. Roseanne Skirbel has more.
Astronomers focused on Captain's star. It's the second fastest moving star in the sky and among the brightest and closest, just 13 light years away. That makes it an ideal candidate for study, says team leader Gilliam Anglada with Queen Mary University of London's School of Physics and Astronomy.
We can get higher precision on the measurements, and also because it's low mass star, we can detect smaller planets and lower mass planets.
The astronomers recorded periodic changes in the motion of the star using spectrometers to calculate shifts in the star's light.
And this tells us that there's a planet around them.
Writing in the journal Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, Anglada describes two new planets. One circles Captain's star in 48 days, the other in 120.
And the one that goes around the star every 48 days, this is at the right distance from the star to allow liquid water on its surface. So this is why we say this is potentially habitable.
The planet, dubbed Captain B, is about five times the size of Earth. The second planet, Captain C, is a more massive super-Earth that astronomers think is too cold to support liquid water. While the findings confirm the growing evidence that planets surround every star, Anglada says what sets Captain's star apart is its age.
It formed only 1 billion years after the universe was born. The universe has 13 billion years around that. This means that the elements to form planets that could support liquid water were present very, very early in the story of the universe.
Anglada says life would have had a very long time to evolve, making Captain B the oldest potentially habitable planet discovered to date. The next step, he says, is to probe its atmosphere to find out whether it has water. Scientists are developing instruments to do that. While we're waiting for answers, you can see Captain's star in the sky over the southern hemisphere with a pair of binoculars. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Farmers are relying a lot more on technology and various agribusiness services to reduce costs and improve yields and profits. Veronique LaCapra looked into one particular service that's trying to predict the weather and aims to help farmers adapt to climate change.
The Finfrocks farm about 3,200 hectares of corn and soybeans in central Illinois. It's a family operation. The couple run it with just their son and one employee. To farm all that land with just four people, the Finfrocks use some pretty high-tech equipment. That tractor is attached to a planter that can seed 48 rows at a time. That's a 24-meter swath on one pass through the field. And on the straightaways, the tractor can steer itself. But Shelley Finfrock says there's one thing no amount of technology can control.
Weather's probably the most important thing and the most uncontrollable thing.
Finfrock says weather affects every aspect of a farmer's operation, from soil fertility to pests and weeds to yields and profits. So for the past year, Finfrock has been beta testing an online service called Climate Basic. Every morning at about 4:15, it sends her a text listing her family's farms and how much rain each one got in the past 24 hours, down to hundredths of a centimeter. Tristan Dolgeval is with Climate Corporation, which developed Climate Basic. He says the company uses data from the U.S. National Weather Service and other sources, some public, some private. The paid pro version of its software just launched this year. It aims to give farmers advice about all aspects of their operations. what to plant, when to apply fertilizers and pesticides, and even how much money they can expect to make off their crop. Tristan Dolgeval says the computer models are only as good as the data that people put into them. That means the company needs detailed information about each farm, things only the farmer would know. Dolgeval says Climate Corporation keeps that information confidential. But Shelley Finrock is still wary of how much data she should really share.
Because of competition and because of having Big Brother watching, I don't know how else to put it.
In this case, Big Brother is Monsanto. The agricultural biotech seed giant acquired Climate Corporation last fall for close to $1 billion. As apprehensive as farmers may be about their data being misused, an increasing number seem willing to take the risk. According to Monsanto, they're already using ClimatePro on more than 400,000 hectares. And the company plans to keep expanding, from corn to soybeans, then to other crops, here in the U.S. and internationally. For VOA News, I'm Veronique LaCapra in St. Louis.
Robots are getting better at working closely with humans in industrial settings. In this report by George Putich, Science World's Doug Bernard tells us that the human-robot connection in industry was apparent at this year's International Conference of Robotics and Automation in Hong Kong.
In the year 2000, Japanese engineers stunned the world with their humanoid robot Osimo, who could walk, run, and grasp both hard and soft objects. 14 years later, robotics are still not ready to help out in our homes, but many mechanical and electrical solutions first applied in those experimental platforms are now being used in industry and medicine. For example, different mechanical arms and hands are being designed for jobs that require not only greater strength and precision than human hands, but are also safe to operate around people. A robotic arm from Barrett Technology can mimic any move by a human-operated arm right down to the strength of the grip. This kind of functionality is something that robotics engineer Brian Zenowich says can be very useful in medical applications.
You can control the forces on a person. You can control the forces that are being applied by a person. So it's great for rehabilitation, for physical therapy, for surgery, that type of thing.
A robot called Baxter is very good at learning even complicated operations with no need for special software. General Manager at Shanghai Gitech Scientific Instruments, Jensen Chang, says robots like these will increasingly replace humans at menial jobs.
You can train the people to do something advanced. This is so-called the development of society.
This little robot can locate and kick a soccer ball. Well, it can't do much more. Research engineer Jason Jin says it can surely get elementary school students interested in robotics. He said that robotics is an integration of electronics, mechanics, computer science, and so on, so it has great educational use. With the development of robotics, we can provide children with some more suitable learning tools. For George Putich, I'm Doug Bernard.
Well, since we just heard a story about robotics, for today's Science World Quick Quiz, we'd like to know, from the following, who is credited with coining the word robotics? Is it A, Thomas Edison, B, Isaac Asimov, or C, Nikola Tesla? Good luck. We'll give you the correct answer in just a few minutes from now. Listening to Science World, VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine. One of the worst natural disasters in recorded history was the destruction of Pompeii by a volcano nearly 2,000 years ago. Now, the California Science Center is presenting the history and the science behind the tragedy. Mike O'Sullivan has this report from Los Angeles.
Mount Vesuvius unleashed fiery gases and scorching ash on August 24th in 79 A.D., Visitors to the California Science Center see a computer-generated film reconstructing the tragedy. The disaster has been shown on screen many times in an Italian feature from 1913 and other Hollywood treatments, including scenes of this year's epic film Pompeii. Archaeologist Kenneth Lopatin says hot ash preserved the outlines of the victims and kept intact many everyday items that surrounded them.
When we go to Rome, we have the glorious shells of great imperial buildings. What Pompeii gives us is something we don't get in the literary sources, which is the everyday, the domestic, the simple.
Including the coins and artwork, household gods, work tools, and cooking utensils. Pompeii was a small commercial city away from the ancient Roman centers of power, and its neighboring community, Herculaneum, was a Mediterranean resort. Both were buried in the eruption. Diane Perloff of the California Science Center says they still hold a fascination.
This was a city that was a resort, it was luxurious, it was high living, and then it was just, you know, wiped off the face of the earth all at once. There's something very sort of mythical about that story.
The film Pompeii, released in February, brought that drama to the screen with a mix of fact and fiction, says Kenneth Lopatin.
The latest Pompeii film, I think, did a really good job of capturing urban topography. They did flights over the site, and they computer reconstructed the city. The volcano, I think they did a good job of. They didn't have a lot of lava. They had volcanic gases and clouds and mudslides, because if you had a lot of lava, we wouldn't have anything preserved. It would have been burnt and destroyed.
That science is explained here, along with a fascinating glimpse into the everyday lives of these ancient Romans, their medical tools, artworks, and the weapons and armor used by gladiators. 150 items are on loan from the Naples National Archaeological Museum. California Science Center President Jeff Rudolph.
The forces of nature are incredibly strong, and we've learned to live with them, but they can have catastrophic consequences.
Pompeii was rediscovered in the 18th century, buried beneath the ash, with haunting images that stare out from its artwork. Those faces from the past speak to modern viewers, says Kenneth Lopatin.
But I think it also is a mirror of the present, where we see ourselves in the past. And that's why for 250 years, Pompeii, since its rediscovery, has been incredibly popular, and exhibitions like this one are so exciting.
And why the drama of Pompeii still intrigues us. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Inside our intestines are trillions of microbes that are busy extracting the nutrients from the food we eat. But these helpful organisms can be damaged by malnutrition, and a new study shows that the damage can continue after treatment. Art Chimes has more.
Malnutrition is one of the leading health challenges facing young children in developing countries. Death rates are down thanks in part to supernutritional food therapies and programs to treat malnourished kids. But microbiologist Jeffrey Gordon of Washington University in St. Louis says malnutrition has long-term consequences.
Stunting, problems with immune function, reductions in IQ persist despite these therapeutic interventions. And the question is, why?
Children who go through a period of malnutrition may be at a permanent disadvantage. In a new study in Bangladesh, Gordon and his colleagues used DNA to study the intestinal microbes, also called the microbiota, which normally change or mature as a child gets older. They found that children who were undernourished had what they describe as an immature microbiota, even after getting the standard therapy of antibiotics and food supplements.
Well, the therapeutic food caused them to gain weight, but it didn't affect the state of maturity of their microbiota.
Gordon thinks reversing the effects of malnutrition requires not just healthy food, but also a gut full of healthy, mature microbes.
Whether healthy growth is possible with this immaturity, we don't think so.
A lot of work stands between this study and better treatment for malnutrition, which might include supplements containing good bacteria, along with improved therapeutic foods. But the first author of the paper, Washington University MD-PhD student Satish Subramanian, says he and his colleagues are encouraged by the results of their research.
And this gives us hope that through this study and others to come, that we will better understand the variation of microbiota structure across different children, across varying nutritional status, and possibly across different geographies.
The research paper by Subramanian, Gordon, and their colleagues is published online in the journal Nature. For VOA News, this is Art Chimes in St. Louis.
The Obama administration is proposing stronger regulations to limit climate-changing emissions from U.S. power plants. Roseanne Skirball returns and has this report.
In his most recent address to the nation, President Obama called the new rule critical.
Today, about 40% of America's carbon pollution comes from power plants. But right now, there are no national limits to the amount of carbon pollution that existing plants can pump into the air we breathe. None.
The new Clean Power Plan targets the nation's more than 600 coal-fired power plants, the single largest source of carbon pollution in the United States. The plan would require a 30% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from 2005 levels by 2030. The proposal offers a broad array of options, says Kevin Kennedy, who directs the U.S. Climate Initiative for the World Resources Institute.
The flexibility is the ability to look at the entire electricity system so that you can look at energy efficiency, you can look at renewables, you can look at switching fuels from coal to natural gas, making more use of existing natural gas plants that have been sitting relatively idle for the last decade.
Coal plants supply nearly one-third of the U.S. electric supply. The new rule would shut down plants, eliminate jobs, and raise electric rates, says Jeff Olmsted, a former EPA official who represents the coal industry for the law firm Bracewell & Giuliani. He says higher electric rates could also push industrial operations abroad.
And to some extent, we're seeing that happen in Europe already, where Europe has had almost no investment from heavy industry, and heavy industries that formerly were in Europe are moving to China or India, or in some cases even the United States, because power prices here today are significantly less than they are in Europe.
Kennedy agrees that rules alone are not enough, but says the plan is an important signal to the global community that the United States is taking a leadership role in the battle against climate change.
That makes it much more likely that you'll be able to get a strong international agreement next year, where you would expect to see China and India and other countries coming to the table, more willing to think about reductions on their own now that the United States is seriously acting.
After a year-long comment period, the EPA rules will be finalized. A legal challenge from the coal power industry is expected to follow. UN negotiators hope to have a new global warming treaty in place by 2015. Roseanne Skirball, VOA News, Washington.
Let's find out if you have the correct answer to this week's quick quiz. Just a few minutes ago, we asked from the following... Who is credited with coining the word robotics? Is it A, Thomas Edison, B, Isaac Asimov, or C, Nikola Tesla? The answer is B. It was the legendary science fiction author Isaac Asimov who gets the credit for coming up with the term robotics back in the early 1940s when he wrote his famous three laws of robotics, which are... Number one, a robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. Two, a robot must obey the orders given to it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And third, a robot must protect its own existence, as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
For a long time, doctors and other medical professionals have been stressing just how important it is to get a good night's sleep. Getting the proper amount of quality sleep each night plays a key role in keeping us healthy. But what does quality sleep mean? How much sleep should we get each night? And what can you do if you have problems sleeping? Mark Underwood, a neuroscience researcher, an expert on the topic of brain aging, and president and co-founder of the Wisconsin-based biotech company Quincy Bioscience, joins us today for our one-on-one segment to answer these and other questions on sleep. And he'll share his five best ways to improve sleep quality. We pretty much know what sleep is. What is quality sleep?
Well, quality sleep is the type of sleep that allows your brain to rest and rejuvenate overnight. It's absolutely the most important part of our day in terms of getting our brain retooled to take on a new day tomorrow.
Now, what percentage of people do you estimate aren't getting quality sleep?
Well, boy, there's a lot of people in America, maybe half, are plagued with occasional sleep issues, and chronic sleep issues are maybe in 10 to 20% of the population.
And when you're talking about chronic sleep issues, what are we talking about?
Well, their inability to fall asleep or maintain more than just several hours of sleep at night.
Just how important is getting good quality sleep to our physical health?
Well, it can cause a lot of problems if you don't get enough sleep, a lot of different health complications. You can have mood disorders, you can be irritable, you can be constantly exhausted. And a lot of research talks about memory loss is actually affiliated with inability to sleep properly.
What are some of the other health hazards and complications of not getting good sleep?
Well, we can see issues related to memory, to our mood. We can become irritable, and we can also feel very exhausted. A lot of research points to the fact that with memory loss, you can have 10 times worse of memory if you don't get an adequate night's sleep.
What are the effects of getting older on sleep quality?
Well, as we grow older, we have a lot more difficulty getting proper sleep. Part of that's the aging process, and part of that's bad habits that develop over time. But all in all, we need to have more sleep so that we have a healthier brain and a healthier mind.
We've always heard we should get 8 hours of sleep per night. Is that pretty much the standard?
Absolutely. 7 to 8 hours of good, interrupted sleep is the standard. We realize some people can be very healthy getting less than that. That's just sort of the way their bodies are wired. But most of us need that 7 to 8 hours.
Let's talk about those five best ways to improve sleep that you write about, improve sleep quality. Can you run them down for us?
Well, one of the things is make sure you have a nice, comfortable surface. Make sure that you've got a good, sturdy mattress, something that's clean, something that's comfortable. And it often helps to keep it cool, literally turning down the thermostat, having a cool bedroom, having that cool underside of the pillow feeling really can help induce the sleep. Certainly, you don't want to eat a big meal before dinner. That can really cause your digestive system to kick in, and your digestion can actually interrupt your sleep, certainly with spicier foods. And you want to keep your eyes closed and shut. If you keep your eyes exposed to too many bright objects like the television or your iPad or your phone, you're actually going to fight against your body's natural ability to fall asleep, because the longer you keep your eyes open, the slower you release melatonin, which helps you go to sleep. And finally, go to bed tired. Make sure that you get some good exercise. Exercise and physical training can really help you sleep much more deeply because your body knows it needs to go into recovery mode.
You mentioned a couple of things that we shouldn't do, such as watching TV, and I can imagine not only being disturbed from the light from a TV image or the image from your computer or mobile phone, your mind is wandering and working as it's trying to gather information from these media materials.
Especially if you see some of the news items that are going on in the world, you'd be quite disturbed and probably can't fall asleep because of the things that are going on in the world. So certainly reduce your stress by turning off the tube, but also literally getting yourself in a dark space is very important, and staring at a computer screen is the opposite that you need.
What if you do get up in the middle of the night for one reason or another? What's the best way to get back in bed and fall asleep as soon as possible?
Well, one of the key things is that just have a very dull nightlight to help you get to the bathroom if that's what you need. I certainly don't want to break their toe trying to get there, but turning on a bunch of lights, turning on even the bathroom light, is something that can really wake up your system, and you'll have a much more difficult time falling asleep. So as much as you can, fumbling around in as dark as you can stand, get to the restroom, get back to bed, and get that cool underside of the pillow going, you'll be back asleep in no time.
That was Mark Underwood. He's the president and co-founder of the biotech company Quincy Bioscience, which is based in Wisconsin. That's it for this edition of Science World. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I am Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us next Saturday and Sunday. as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.